Hello, and welcome to The Library Coven, a bi-weekly podcast in which two bookish besties discuss mostly YA fantasy through the lens of intersectional feminist criticism. Why? Because talking about books is pretty magical.
I'm Jessie.
And I'm Kelly.
And this week we're discussing To Shape a Dragon's Breath by Monaquil Black Goose, which follows Anacus, who, upon finding a dragon's egg and being chosen by the dragon Kasakwa, heads to a school for dragoneers run by the Anglish colonizers to learn to shape a dragon's breath. Things go awry because the Anglish are not happy to have an indigenous person amongst their midst and amongst them, and yeah. Chaos ensues, as it does.
As it does. Initial reactions.
I listened to the audiobook, which was narrated by Charlie Flight. It was amazing. One of the things I always love about audiobooks is how it allows the listener to hear the language as it's meant to be spoken. I feel like I say that like every time. but a magical school is just a setting that is so fun for a book. And I've not read a lot of dragon books, so this one was fun. I give it 4.5 stars because there were a few things that I was a bit confused about at the end, but I don't think were related to there being a sequel. So I don't know. We'll see.
4.5 stars. That's pretty good for a debut. That's not too shabby. I also listened to the audiobook. Completely echo what you said about like hearing the languages as they are meant to be heard. I loved it. I was just like swept away. I wanted to know what happened. I'm just in love with Anacus's like insights and her voice and how she like doesn't take any bullshit from anyone. She's like not here for this. She doesn't have like a colonized mentality, and it's just like honestly kind of shocking how different that makes like her worldview and her actions. And I'm like, yes, more of this, please, more of this role modeling. Yes. For YA.
Yes. Also I have to go get Lainey real quick because she's crying at the store. Okay. I'm sorry.
Look at her on screen.
So sorry.
Oh my gosh, she's so cute. I love seeing her. It's perfect that she should be here because we're going to talk about cats today.
We are. Okay.
Recommend if you like.
I think mythology stories more generally, there's a lot of mythology from Anacus's people and from Norse mythology, which I thought was really interesting. So I know Neil Gaiman has a book called Norse mythology, so I think one of those would be like a good listen slash read. I think he does the audiobook, which is pretty cool. And then funny enough, I think if you like this book, you might also enjoy Jane Austen, which I know sounds like out of left field, but
no,
like,
I get
the
it
authors, okay.
I get
but,
it
like both authors are really funny and point out like the differences between those from different societies, although it's like class related in Jane Austen. I think they both poke fun at some of like the ridiculousness of tradition and like social norms, which I found really funny. So as I was reading this, I was like thinking of like Emma and Pride and Prejudice, and I know Jane Austen has other books, but those two are my favorites. So I just thought it was really funny, and so it was just like interesting to put those two together for some reason.
Yeah, I totally get it. I would not have come up with this, but I could definitely see it. Yeah, lots of like insights into like why is this nonsense? Like, why have you been nonsensing this for like 3 centuries? Like, it makes no sense. I also put How to Train Your Dragon, of course, because we are literally training dragons in the book. I also put Fourth Wing ? I haven't read it, but you have, right?
I have read it. This book is way better than
Okay. I was just like, that's the dragon book that's in the zeitgeist. So I was like, maybe that book? I don't know.
And I feel like I've heard like rumblings about the author maybe being like problematic. So I don't really like know about that. And I know some like people who speak like Gaelic have been like very upset with like her use of Gaelic words, but like the author doesn't really understand them or even pronounce them correctly herself. So I think that was like really frustrating. And obviously I think a good critique of that book, like you can't just put like Gaelic or Gaelic or, you know, another language in a book that you don't speak, is just kind of like a little iffy. You know what I mean?
Maybe we're past that at this point. Yeah. in the publishing industry. Okay. Well then if you read that book, then maybe level up and read this book instead.
Yes.
I would also say like magic school books generally, I thought the book did a good job of like not being boring. even though Anna Kuss was like forced to do a bunch of like busy work and silly stuff for her courses, but I didn't think it like dragged on too much.
Yeah, I would agree.
Why did we choose this book? It was recommended by Gray. Thanks, Gray.
Yeah, thanks always. This was a really good one.
Very good.
Time to talk about world building in Through the Wardrobe. So the book really has a mix of groups in it that I think map onto our real world in some ways. We have multiple Indigenous groups who we mostly see through Anna Kuss and Theode. Anna Kuss grew up with her people on the island of Musquaq. Oh gosh, I tried to write everything phonetically for this.
You got it. It's Musquaq.
That's it. Thank you so much. Musquaq. And Theode's parents were part of an uprising, and he was indentured to like a rich guy, and then the dragon bonded with him, and he's a ward of the school. And then we have the Anglish, who seem to have a lot of mythology around them, which seems to be related to like Norse mythology. But then like their names and titles sounded German to me, someone who does not speak German. Oh, because like the teachers were like Frau whatever. And I don't know. There's Lainey. <Yeah. laughs> So I don't know. There was just like a lot of different groups of people, which I don't think we normally see in like books that we read, where it's like so many different groups. And this was like just very interesting to me.
This is definitely like a zone of contact, or like a contact zone between like so many different traditions and perspectives and cultures and foods and... yeah, all of the things. I think there were, you're totally right about the German. I think that there were people who weren't Anglish. They were like, it started with a V or something. It sounded like Volk or something, which like Volk is people in German.
Oh, okay.
And then I think the Anglish were fighting these German knockoffs or whatever. It's not a purse, but it's the word that came to mind. Yeah, so they were like at war, and then they weren't at war. You did like a really great overview, because we get so many like things that map onto the real world. For example, like Indigenous people being made wards of the state, or like an institution, for example, because the illegitimate occupying colonizing government doesn't recognize them as like, doesn't recognize their personhood and stuff. And yeah, I thought that the author really did a good job of like translating that into a fictitious world, but making it feel like it's still, you could tell that it's like rooted in reality, because it just felt like so visceral, and it was like so well developed.
Yeah. And I should have mentioned, I put like uprising in quotation marks, because it wasn't really an uprising. The colonizers came and like tried to take the Indigenous people's shit, like as they do. So it's not really an uprising. It's more of like a defense of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But the Anglish called it an uprising, you know, because they're shitty.
And the story that Theode was told about his parents was like from this colonizer perspective, and it was like so sad to see him like believe that his parents were like quote unquote murderers or whatever, when it's really like they are like freedom fighters, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm glad that he gets to reclaim that and gets his story back throughout this novel.
Yeah. Anna Kuss's dragon Kasakwa is described as being very cat-like, which is funny because like Lainey is like meowing a bunch right now.
She's been doing the most today.
She knows. As a cat person, I really love this, and especially love that Kasakwa was described as being very playful and rambunctious and cuddly, traits that I think in our culture are often described as belonging to dogs. But I think the book does a really good job of showing like Anna Kuss's care for Kasakwa, and in turn Kasakwa isn't like mean, and he doesn't just like sleep, and you know, like he's very playful. So this in my experience is a genuine description of what it's like, what cats are like, and like if you take good care of them.
Side eye emoji.
Just a reminder that your cats need to play every day, and that you should be doing that and just like taking good care of them. They're not just like pieces of furniture. So there's some like really good videos from Kitten Lady, Hannah Shaw, and Jackson Galaxy, who is like the cat guy, about like how to play with your cat and stuff, and like not using laser pointer, you know, just like all these different things that I think people just don't know about unless you did like a shit ton of research before you got a cat. So yeah, just they need more than I think sometimes people give them. And so I really love this.
Yeah, you, like, imagine if, like, any sort of person, cat person, human person, dog person, is, like, neglected for their whole life. They're maybe not going to have the most vibrant personality, or they're maybe going to be a little bit more reclusive. So, yeah, it tracks, you know? Pay attention to them.
Yeah, and I've known lots of people who, like, they're like, oh, my cat never comes out. Like, they're just hiding all the time. And I'm like, what did you do to make this happen? Like, obviously, sometimes there's going to be cats, especially, like, feral ones. If you, like, bring them inside, they're going to have some issues. But yeah, I just like this part. It was like, I was like, oh, and Lainey's, like, sitting with me while I'm listening to it. So I was just like, oh, this is perfect.
It's so perfect. Yes, that was very cute and fun. And I'm curious what Kasako is going to be like when she gets bigger in future books, because we saw her when she was, like, tiny. And yeah, from, like, the egg hatching to, like, her picking her person. I just loved how you just brought her everywhere, and it's like they sleep together unless it's too big, and then it has to go live outside with the other dragons. I'm like, oh no, that'll be so sad for everyone involved when that happens.
That was so sad. Maybe kind of like steampunk-esque society we have going on here. Anakusa's brother Nikiot wants to bring some of that technology to Masquipog, and that was just like really interesting to me. I don't really read like steampunky stuff, but it kind of seemed like in that vein a little bit, I think.
Perfect description. Yep. Yeah, we've got like tinkering and artificing and it definitely felt like gears and like industrial revolution almost vibes, which is kind of like what steampunk, the time period that steampunk is like hearkening back to. But yeah, totally. And then we get like the clash, you know, of cultures, with like Nikiot wants to bring some of this technology and indigenize it, you know, and do, you know, helpful things for his community, but his dad doesn't really get it. So we get like, we see some of the intergenerational differences too, which is, I thought was cool.
Yeah, Nikiot's like basically like okay boomer to his dad.
And his dad does come around eventually and listen to his actual perspective and, you know, neuroplasticity. We can change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's discuss all things magic.
So Anakus is Nampashawayasit, which means that she was chosen by the dragon, which in this case is Kasakwa, and she'll be able to do magic with him. Although, like, I wasn't really sure what this would look like or how it worked. Like, we kind of saw that some of it was like connected to her feelings, and then Kasakwa would like do certain things based on that, but like the magic elements were still like a little bit fuzzy to me, and I think it might come about more in like the sequel as Anakus is like learning to use her magic with Kasakwa, but this part was like just kind of confusing to me.
Yeah, this is where we get the title from, right? Like to shape a dragon's breath, because like the process of learning is like the students have to go through this elaborate colonizer school hazing ritual in order to be able to like tell their dragon what to do with their like magic breath, I guess. And then that's where we got like the Athers, which like mapped onto elements, and like drawing Skiltas, which like almost look like they were, in my mind, I was kind of picturing, you know, those that like, oh my God, how do you even describe this? Did you ever, when you were younger, use those little like plastic circle things, and it would go around in a gear, and you would just turn it round and round and round? It would make this like super elaborate design with lines on top of each other. That's what I thought of.
Oh yeah, that's like such a good description. Like,
and then I thought it was so cool that Anakus had like this epiphany that like the dances in her community's tradition like make these sorts of patterns that like the okay boomer annoying like worst professor was like failing to teach everyone. I thought it was like a really nuanced magical system that just felt so like rooted in reality, on almost being like, yeah, Athers, aka elements, and this is what we do with them, and we separate them into their component parts. And yeah, there's like the magical element of the dragon obviously in there, but yeah, I thought that this was cool, and I can't wait for Anakus to actually like be able to do this with Kasakwa, because I feel like we didn't even get to see really any of her potential in this book, because she's like still figuring it all out.
Yeah, I like that you like brought up the Skeltas, or like the dances for Anakus's traditions, because I just thought like all I could think of was like one Jane Austen, you know, like there's always like a ball or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know if you had to do this, but when I was in like elementary school, we had to like learn how to like line dance, but like in the colonial Virginia-y traditions. I'm guessing that's a no because you're laughing. But that's what it made me think of. Like, you know, like these very prescribed dances that used to be like a thing. They're not really anymore in that way. But it's, mm-hmm. it's all I could think of.
Yeah. A line dance would be like a very simple rendition compared to like the stuff that Anikus was describing, the kinds of dances they do. It's like certain community members do this specific step and you do it and it's like interconnecting circles and they're going at different paces and they're moving in different directions. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is so complicated. Good for y'all.
Now we're going to talk about conflict, villain, and good versus evil in Get Me Kylo Ren.
What you put in there is just so perfect. What did you write?
Colonizers and then ellipses. But it's true because it's just like, I mean, these colonizers are coming in. Like when Anikus realized that the dances from her people were also the same thing as the Skiltas, all I could think was like, oh, did they steal this from you? Like, did they ever have dragons or did they come and take your dragons? Because like their society like hasn't seen a dragon in like however many years. It's been like a really long time, like generations. So I'm just kind of like, man, these colonizers are really out here doing the most in the worst possible way. Like
all the shit that's going wrong. And you're like, I think I can trace this back to one particular
white people.
yeah, you said it. It's true. Yeah, just like resource plunder and just like the entitlement and like being so upset when the people that you stole from want their stuff back, you know?
Yeah. Or like taxing them and then we find out like the people who are supposed to like represent them don't even like go talk to them. And I was like, what the hell? I mean, like no surprises there. That's just like not just this political system, but our own as well. Mm-hmm, but I was just like, oh man, this is some bullshit.
Some bullshit, that's for sure. And we did get like, we saw like how society was organized with the different like thanes versus like, I don't even know how you would describe it. It's like you have like a king like person and then you have like the people underneath the king that are like the... it doesn't really matter.
It's very like Game of Thrones, you know,
yes,
like
totally.
Everyone's in charge of their little spots, but then there's like someone who's in charge of all of them, like, you know, or I guess that's like the hierarchical system of England, not mm-hmm. so much it's the same anymore, but like dukes and earls and all that stuff that I'm like, I don't know what any of this means.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. It's like, yeah, like the hierarchy of the royal system. But like, this is like supposedly some sort of representative quote unquote democracy, but
we're supposed to be
supposed to be, but no, not really. But it seemed like there were some elections, but like not everyone could vote because obviously, I mean, that's how this country did things yeah. too.
And to an extent still does.
Yep, it's true. Kind of like along those same lines, like when you get like a colonizer environment and then indigenous people are brought into it or like made to assimilate. I would say like assimilation and tokenization could also go in this section, which is those are the kind of the things that we see Anikus dealing with intimately, like, and Theod, that like we are letting you be at this dragon school and like you have to wear our dress and just like respect our nonsense etiquette traditions and customs and things like that. And then they also both get like tokenized, so like whatever they do, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't sort of thing. And it does show like the double bind of being like, you know, a person of color or indigenous in like a colonizer society. Like you, if you're doing things your own way, you're like, yeah, quote unquote savage, you know. Or if you're doing things like in the colonizer way, then you're like interlopers who are faking it. And so yeah, it just shows that like colonizer logic makes no sense.
Not at all.
I loved the scenes where Anikus is being like, this etiquette, the math isn't mathing. Like, yeah. Y'all aren't saying what you mean. Y'all aren't, like, standing up for what you believe in, you know? Or maybe you are. You're telling on yourselves every moment of every day.
Yeah, and we kind of see that, like, with her roommate, whose name, like, I don't remember now. It's probably somewhere in...
It's like Martha or something.
Yeah. Oh, Marta?
Marta, that's it.
Okay. It's in my notes somewhere. I'm always like writing down like this is this person's roommate, this is whatever. But we see that where she's like not supposed to ask her like how old she is, or like her friend's like, she's Anacus is like, I'm not coming to like your birthday party or whatever, some party she's doing. And her roommate is like, well, you have to let me send the invitation and then RSVP. No, like that's, but Anacus is like, I'm literally telling you right now, I'm not coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So some of it is just like, when you see it laid out like that, it's like, yeah, that's so silly. And mm-hmm. we see that today sometimes where people are like, I wasn't invited. And it's like, well, you told me you couldn't come. Like, why would I send you, like pay to send you an invitation? That's so silly. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. You know, some of these things are just, they're just silly. Like it's all convention. It's like convention all the way down. And so it's just like funny to see it just like plainly written out like that.
Yeah. And here's like where the Jane Austen of it all comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Onward, magical people. Just as one does not simply walk into Mordor, one does not simply read fantasy without talking about all the stuff that we've already been talking about. So, race, class, gender, ability, etc. This is our segment about power and bodies and how they relate.
So, we've kind of been like circling around this the whole time, but like Anacus is often talking about the differences between her people and the Anglish, which I thought was super cool. So we see like this dichotomy set up around the roles of women, marriage conventions, gender identity, class divisions. Those are like the most salient in my mind, but like the funniest part, like the most interesting parts to me were even like Anacus talking about like, well, I've been an adult for like 3 years now. And they're like, oh, that's too young. And it's like, well, it's just a made up convention, you know, or Anacus is like, well, if I want to have more than one spouse, that's like not a big deal, you know? So it's just like showing the dichotomy and how like all of it's kind of made up is what it felt like to me as I was reading it. Like, every society is making up their own rules. And then when you try and like smush them together, sometimes it just seems silly, you know, like how one person does things is silly, or like maybe Anacus sees things that she is like, oh, this is interesting, but whatever. So I don't know. I just like that part. It was really interesting to me just to like see these two like right next to each other.
Totally. Yeah. She's like so insightful and kind of like riffing off of what you said. Some other things that come to mind are like, yeah, she's describing how there's like transness is like normalized in her community. I loved the translation of, I don't remember the word that they used, but like the one who does the work of a caterpillar, like metamorphosing into other things. I thought that was cool. You can court different people at the same time. And she was just like, yeah, all this makes perfect sense. Like if you have a whaler husband who's gone for 7 months of the year and like running a household is more... then like have a wife, people do that, you know, and it's totally, or you can court different people at the same time. And yeah, it just seemed like, okay, there are other ways of doing things and we can normalize that, you know, instead of being so stuck in our shitty ways. Other things that come to mind are like raising children. Anacus is like, they're talking about, I think it might've been with Marta or I can't remember, but they're having a conversation about like how children are raised and whether it's like a communal activity versus like an individual activity, like individual family units. And Anacus is like, whatever they're doing, as in like the Anglish, seems to turn out absolutely awful young men, which like truth.
Yeah.
She's adding the patriarchy right there and how women are the foot soldiers of that, especially white women.
Yeah.
The sections about food, like LMAO, potatoes, overcooked / under seasoned beef and no veggies except for kraut, like... hilarious. Yes. How the dragons are treated is vastly different in like Anacus's community versus in the colonizer Anglish ways. Yeah, she's like very upset by the fact that people, they kill dragons if they don't pair with someone that the society deems like acceptable or whatever. And then when she's on the train going into the city, leaving Mascopoc for the first time, she has this like very insightful comment about how like colonizers love straight lines and control. And so they cut up the land into little squares and separate stuff with like fences and other sort of barriers. And I was like, yep. Nah, that's true in the fictional world. It's true in the real world.
Yeah. We also have slavery and indentured servitude. These are mentioned in relation to like Liberty and Theode. So Liberty's parents were escaped enslaved people, and then like Theode and Liberty are both basically indentured servants. I don't think they use that word specifically. Well, they called it like indentured or something like that.
They called it like a thrall, a debt thrall. Like that's liberty, yeah. Right? She owes money or something.
Yeah, yeah. So we see this coming up, which I thought was like really interesting. Liberty is black. So they kind of talk about even like the differences in the, social norms between like black and indigenous people, which I just found very interesting. I feel like a lot of times in books, we'll just see like a separation. Like it's only can be like one group of people that the book is about and like their relationship with like white people or colonizers or, you know, whatever. So it was interesting to see like these different dynamics going on, which I think kind of expands the world and makes it seem like even more grounded in reality than a book that just like focuses, it's like, oh, there's only these two groups of people, because like that's just not the case.
Yeah, for sure. And like a way to do it where you're not trying to like inhabit that person and like cosplay as someone of a different race or whatever, or like tradition or anything, but a way of including them in ways that felt like nuanced and substantive. Xander is 1,000,000% autistic coded. I really liked this character. Wonder why. When he shows up at his desk and sits down and has his like collection of like STEM toys, I was like, oh, I see you. Like during his class, he's like playing with clay or playing with a stone or different things. He prefers nonverbal communication via writing on this cool little like writing tablet thing. That's magical. We see like a quote unquote meltdown scene when he's with his like awful abusive mother and his sister, who's like a champion for him. He's got this like quote unquote savantish proclivity for other making and other sorts of like educational pursuits. He's definitely underestimated and discriminated against. Marta's like, at one point she says, quote, the poor dear, he's simple. And so we kind of get like, you know, we see in the world that there's still like stigma against people with intellectual disabilities, at least in this, at least in, you know, white colonizer community. But I thought that this was like super well done and didn't feel like voyeuristic or anything like that. It was like, dang, this is like a well-rounded person that you're actually seeing their personhood in. And I appreciated that. I don't know if we've seen that many representations of like autism that are like this nuanced and this on point, at least in fantasy, when it's just like, yeah, they would exist in a fantasy world too, unless we're like down for eugenics and don't want any disabled people in our fantasy, you know?
Yeah, I don't think we've seen any autistic characters, or even like Xander's kind of like a side character, but we do get like, I guess one of the things that I liked about this story too is that even the side characters have like these very big roles. Like they're not just there for like to explain things to Anacus or just be her like her queer friend. Here's her autistic friend. Here's her, you know, this doesn't feel like checking boxes. And I think maybe Xander has like maybe like a little bit of a crush on Marta. And I'm interested to see how that plays out, because Marta is like, she's not like the epitome of like the colonizer, but she is like almost the epitome of like how white women uphold those values. So I am interested to see how that like kind of works out. But I hope like we keep him like a little bit protected, because I'm like, don't hurt him.
He's so precious.
Yeah. Finally, it's time for Shipwrecked, a segment about sexuality, asexuality, sex, romance, and relationships. And sometimes we take liberties and do some shipping of our own. So I think like our big, like, it almost feels like a love triangle because it's three people, but it's not like against each other. So it's like Anacus, Theode, and Liberty. And as we kind of talked about earlier, from the indigenous standpoint, for like Anacus, like it is totally reasonable and acceptable for her to have this relationship with them both at the like romantic relationship with them both at the same time. And we see her having like her moments with each of them. It doesn't get past like kissing, but she's kind of always thinking like, oh, I need to talk to Theode and Liberty about this. I hope they're on board. I need to like also get them together so that we can see if this is like a relationship that would work for the three of us. And I think this will be expanded on in sequels/sequels. I don't know if there's going to be more than one, but I just thought that was really interesting because we don't really see a lot of like polyamorous couples in the books that we've read. I feel like it's maybe come up a couple of times, but just not like as direct as we see in this story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so like open and out there, and it's not, yeah, like normalized, I guess I used the word earlier, even though I'm like, normal, what is she? I don't like her very much. But yeah, Anna Goose isn't like having some sort of existential crisis because she has like feelings for more than one person at one time, or that she feels things for Liberty, who's a woman, and Theode, who's a guy. You know, she's like not all up in her head and like being mean to herself about it, or, you know, internalizing the white colonizer shame based paradigm, which I love. Yeah, I'm excited to see where this goes in the future, because more love, not less, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things that you like, I don't know why this reminded me while you were just saying this, but I think a lot of times, like in our society, we often see men have the ability to have multiple wives, but not like the other side of that. So it was also just like, you know, like makes that kind of logic like seem silly. Like, why would only one person get to do that, or like one type of person and not like other types of people? So I also appreciated that. Like, it was fine for like anyone along the gender spectrum to have multiple partners, instead of it just being like only men get to do that.
Yeah, not cool. And it does, like, it's interesting because like non-monogamy / polyamory, which are like not really the same thing, but they are related, are like, it's like in the zeitgeist right now. It seems like there have been a lot of memoirs lately that have been published about people who've, you know, opened up relationships or who are in, you know, polyamorous relationships. And it's interesting to see it like trickle down, maybe is the wrong phrase to use, but like also simultaneously appear in a totally different genre that's for like a totally different audience. All right, now it's time for Kill Your Darlings. We're going to talk about writing style, narration, characterization, plot structure, and basically whatever else comes to mind.
So because Anna Goose is new to her school and being around the Anglish, there's like a lot of info dumping, which makes a lot of sense. But there would be sometimes be like a lot of time taken up explaining things to Anna Goose through characters who've been around the Anglish for longer. And sometimes I could get like a little boring. Like, I know it all needed to be explained. And I think this is just something that happens a lot in fantasy novels, especially in like these like magical schools where someone wasn't in the world before and now they're like being taken into it. But it can just get like a little bit like blah sometimes when you're reading it, to be like, is, I don't know another way to get this information across. But I was also just like, oh, okay, these, I just gotta get through this part.
We're just gonna learn about etiquette for 20 minutes, and yeah we're like mirroring Anna Goose's trajectory, kind of like what you're explaining. Yeah
Also, at my library, this book is in the adult section, but then other places have it under young adult, which was like really interesting to me. Obviously, all things being conventions and all that, but I can see why this book would be a great rec for like a teen or an adult. Like, it really could go either way or both, you know? But it was just interesting to me to see like some places have it as young adult, some places have it as adult. And I like looked at the publisher, but the publisher publishes both young adult and adult books. So it's not just like one of those like publishing houses that does like one or the other. So it was just like very interesting to me. So I don't really know, like, this book just like, I guess, bucking conventions as we see happening in the story, the book just doesn't have like a tidy little box you can put it into for like who is the preferred or like correct quote unquote age group for the book.
Mm-hmm. And as like you've said in previous episodes, it has less to do with like the age of the protagonist, which Anna Goose is 15, 16, which you think, you know, YA, teenager. But yeah, her perspective, she's definitely been like forced to have a more adult perspective, being like an outsider in a colonizer world. And she's like, you know, experiencing all these different microaggressions/macroaggressions/aggressions, you know. So yeah, her perspective doesn't feel like totally like an adolescent or like a, you know, a teen that's been sheltered or something.
Which also, I guess, it makes sense like in the context of like Anna Goose herself, like in her society, she's considered an adult already, and then in like the white society, she's considered a teen, and like so are all her friends. So it's almost even like an adult in one world and a teen in another. So even like Anna Goose is like straddling that line between like teen and adult.
Totally. I'm thinking like going forward into the series, Anna Goose and Kazakwa, like they have to travel west at some point, right? Like, it seemed like, because they're talking about, you know, all of the wars of colonizer aggression and expansion going on in the western part of the continent, with like untamed dragons or whatever. And I'm like, yes, please. I hope Anakus and Kasako get to spend some time in like non-colonized settings. I think that would be like amazing to see in the future. And I hope that the series goes in that direction, literally.
Yes, I would love that. That would be really cool too, because we have only seen like the interactions of, like you kind of said, like the indigenous people who have been colonized or are in like relation to the colonizers. So yeah, seeing groups that haven't, it's just, it's a really cool way for like indigenous people to like imagine a world where this never happened, you know? So just like, what do they wish their world could be like? So yeah, I'm interested to see that as well.
There's this scene where Anakus is talking to her like natural philosophy, aka science teacher, and he's like kind of quizzing her to see like, you know, how much she knows about the scientific method and stuff. And she like gives this whole ass gardening lesson. And I'm like, this is like a thesis. Like, she just knows this from her like life and her community and how connected they are to the land and, you know, not divorced from like where they get their resources from physically, psychologically, like spiritually, you know, it's also connected. I'm into gardening now because it's my new work and slash special interest. So I loved this part. I was like, oh my gosh, this is all stuff that I'm barely scratching the surface of learning. And she's just out here rattling off like, this is how it works. I'm like, good for you.
Yeah, that part was really interesting because I also think it, I didn't put this in the notes, but I've been reading so much about like epistemology lately, and just like how different groups of people have like different ways of knowing and like what it means to have knowledge. So yeah, if people are interested, go look into like indigenous epistemologies. It's very interesting just to see like what a wider range, because I think so, like, you know, in school we learn like scientific method and that's it. And then it's like, that's not all there is. Like, you don't have to have a hypothesis. You're allowed to just like explore things and not come in with any preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It was just very interesting to think about like how different groups of people think about knowledge. And I think we kind of see this with Anakus and like being at the school.
Yeah. Okay. It's time for real talk. This book, it like, I guess, wedged open the door in my perspective that I was like already open, that like there's other ways of being, like, and this is a perfect, your epistemology comment is like a perfect segue, because we spend so much time in like colonizer school in the novel, in real life. And it just like makes me curious about what indigenous epistemologies, educational systems might be like. I imagine so much more would happen outside. So much more would be experiential learning. So much that I imagine like less busy work. And maybe these are just like my colonizer perspectives, like, and I'm projecting, but it is, I think, fun to imagine that there are other ways of doing things and that are currently happening slash have always happened, you know, widen our perspective a little.
Yeah. And I think in that vein, like, I think you told me about the show Reservation Dogs, but like, even just like watching the show and them like how they learn from like their elders, and like everyone is like on uncle, cousin, you know, like that kind of thing. So if you haven't watched the show, I'd recommend it. And I should have put this up at the top, but I'd also recommend Apple Skin to the Core, which is a novel, like a memoir in verse, and it's for young adults. Funny enough, I think I've seen that Gray has read it. It was a book I read this year that was really good and just kind of talked about, you know, what it is like to live on the reservation and like, you know, one person's experience of being indigenous in colonizer land, but just also like, you know, how they pass on knowledge and those sorts of things. So I would recommend that book as well.
That's by Eric Gansworth. I just looked it up. I've read this one too. The cover looks familiar.
Yeah. And I listened to the audiobook and it was really good. And the author reads it, which is always fun.
Oh, that is super fun. All right. Is it time for some card questions?
It's time for card questions.
Is this book about fate or free will? Maybe false dichotomy.
Yeah.
I think the things that the colonizer perspective seems like our fate are really just like people in the past doing whatever the fuck they wanted. And then it gets like retconned to be like, this was destined to happen. We are a quote unquote superior race or whatever. Yeah, that's, I guess, my riff on that. What do you think?
I agree. It's kind of like, you know, the American idea of like manifest destiny. Mm-hmm. That's what we see going on here. They're like, oh, this was always meant to be. And I'm like, now y'all made some shitty ass decisions.
And then you kept making them for centuries. Yeah. Oh. Mm-hmm. Were there any descriptions that captivated you?
Obviously the descriptions of Kasakwa, because just her cat-like nature. I was just like, you know, cat heart face emoji.
There were some chapters where we get like folklore told by different characters throughout, and it's kind of like part of the info dump, but I thought those were more like more interesting parts of the info dump. I really liked those because we got different stories from various cultural traditions. I thought those were pretty cool to listen to.
Oh, and another thing that you liked, because you told me about it last week, was the chapter titles, and you didn't put it in the notes.
Oh, yes, I did like the chapter titles. I should have put it in Kill Your Darlings. It was interesting because some of the chapters, like if you just read them, like I didn't have a physical book, but if you like looked in the table of contents, some of them like almost read like a poem that continued, like Anakus went to the city is one chapter and had an interesting conversation. And they can, like, if you just go high level on the chapter title, so that was cool that they connected and made different sentences, which I'm like, okay, this is, like, making sense. And it felt almost, like, old-timey, almost, yeah. Right? Which I, you know, which, like, the setting is supposed to be, like, in the past compared to, like, our current society. So I thought that was cool.
I feel like it goes with that question, so it's, like, perfect.
It does. All right. Last one. One more.
Yeah.
What do the characters symbolize? Are they symbolizing, or are they just like are they a symbol for something else? It doesn't really seem like that to me. Like each character seems like, I don't know how to answer this.
I mean, I think in a way Theode represents like assimilation and then like an unlearning, because he didn't get to spend time with like his people. I mean, it's hard for the rest of them. I don't think of them. Yeah, I don't really think of them as symbolizing anything in particular, but I do think they all like kind of represent obviously different kinds of people, because I think that's just how like literature works. Like they're representing almost like not stereotypes, but like specific types of people.
Or like different kinds of experiences maybe, you know?
Yeah. But I think all these experiences that they're having just map really well onto the real world. So like Anakus is learning about a different group of people she didn't know before, but also is like teaching other people about her own people and society. Theode is unlearning the idea that, you know, the Anglish are doing things correctly and are telling the truth about stuff.
Nope.
Yeah. Liberty is like the Black experience, especially as it relates to like indentured servitude and slavery. And then I would say like Xander is like represents like the disability perspective, and then Marta is like the really nice white lady who can do no wrong, but we're about to see shit go to hell. And mm-hmm. I think in the next book with her.
yes. Okay, excellent answer, well done.
Thank you. I really like this book like a lot, and now that I said 4.5 stars, I'm like, maybe it should be 5. I really did like it, and it's like really stuck with me in like the weeks since I listened to it, so I'm changing it to 5 stars.
Oh, amazing. Yay. You heard it here. Yeah, this is definitely going to be something that I recommend to people, just because it's like, yeah, so different and less, maybe I think why it can get like pigeonholed as escapist, and like that's not a bad thing, you know, but I feel like this is maybe a less escapist novel. I think just because it's like so committed, I think, to showing like colonizer and indigenous like relationships and how it actually, you know, plays out.
Yeah, and I think just like for the whole story, like it doesn't play into any of the fantasy tropes that we see, you know, so I think that just like makes it feel like much more fresh than like some of the ones that kind of stick to that like prescribed idea of what a fantasy story needs to look like, which is really cool. Thanks for listening to The Library Coven. We'll be back in 2 weeks for a discussion of House of Merriam by J.L. As always, we'd love to be in conversation with you magical folks. Let us know what you think of the episode, anything we missed, or just say hi by dropping a line in the comments or by reaching out to us on Instagram @The Library Coven.
You can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice, and we'd really appreciate it if you would rate and review the show / spread the word to other people out there who you think would enjoy it. If you're able to support us financially, you can make a one-time donation to us on Ko-fi. You can support us monthly on Patreon or by shopping at our bookshop.org affiliate page. Until next time, stay magical.